Welcome to Mysterious Goings On, the podcast about creativity, writing, and mystery. Every week, we talk about all kinds of great fiction and meet the people who write it. We also feature explorations about creativity in all walks of life. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will join you right after this.
You know, it's not every day that you get a legitimately award-winning actor who says, "Well, what do you got? What do you want me to read?" I was presented with this opportunity a few months ago. Listen, guys, if you're an author and you're thinking about your first audiobook, your first reader of an audiobook, you're like, you don't know what to do, right? Part of you is like, I did a play in high school. I'll read it myself. No, you won't. Or if it's like, I have no idea, so I'll just give up. No, you shouldn't. What you should do is get over to ACX and start auditioning people, okay? But I'm going to save you all a lot of trouble, because what I got is an award-winning. And when I say award-winning, I don't mean like, he got, you know, best thespian in high school, although he probably did. What he is an award-winning state level, regional level, and definitely placed national level actor who knows what he's talking about. His name is Scott Bartley. And if you're a longtime fan and friend of the show, you know he appeared on this very show with an episode called Backstage with the actor Scott Bartley in August 15th, 2019. In which he is a actor, director, and community theater leader, and he discussed his career and the ways he constantly challenges himself to improve his craft and offer audiences something new. And in that episode, and there'll be a link in the show notes, calm down, it'll be there, don't go hunting it up, you don't have to, because I make things easy for you. He shares tales of his time as an actor in LA, his take on what people don't understand about community theater, and why after more than 30 years, he's still treading the boards. But even more, he's going to talk about his latest venture, which is into not just narrating. I hate that word narrating. Acting out audiobooks. Scott Bartley, damn son, welcome back to Mysterious Goings On.
Thank you so much, Alex, for having me. 2019 when I was on.
Before that's COVID.
BC.
Before COVID, that's right. And what gets me is we had this great discussion. I said, I got to get you back, talk more. And then boom, something happened. I just remember the last time we really spoke professionally, not personally, was when I just begged you basically, would you read one of my books? And you were like, hey, got an idea. I'm getting ready to start launching my career as an audiobook. And again, I don't like the word narrator. Tell me what you are. Are you a narrator, reader, actor? What are you?
Yes, Alex, I'm all of those things.
I like that.
But I would probably... in this case, call it a storyteller.
Ooh.
Because that's what I'm doing when I'm reading a novel or a short story or anything like that. Because it is, like you said, it's more than just narrating. That kind of implies, you know, a voiceover on a trailer or something like that. But storytelling, that's everything. And I've been doing that. So for those of the vast audience that don't know, in my day job, I am a high school English teacher. And so for years and years and years, I've been reading and telling stories in class, often, sometimes short stories, sometimes I'll read novels. And it really, I started doing it more and more, and it's kind of a sad reason why. If those of you out there who have not been in a high school in a while, let me just tell you something. The children cannot read. And so whenever we would, you think back to our high school days, and so we would do something in class and they were like, oh, okay, who would like to read? Or the teacher would make everyone read. And so when I was a younger teacher, I used to do that. I was like, oh, the kids need to know how to read and blah, blah, blah. Well, as time went along and I realized that they couldn't, and it became more and more painful for me to sit and listen to, you know, some 16-year-old kid struggle through a paragraph. And all that does is it hurts the kid, but the rest of the class loses interest. They're not listening to, you know, him try to pronounce dog or whatever. So I just started doing it more and more myself. And eventually, you know, the kids would start asking, you know, I'd say, all right, kids, you need to read this short story. And they were like, can you read it? Can you read it, Mr. Bartley? And so I started, you know, reading it a lot more. In fact, I've done a few novels out loud in class. And so that was perfect training for this experience. So that to answer your question, the long answer, I think storyteller is probably the best way to describe it.
What, can you, do you mind telling me, just give me one of the books? What novel have you read in class that the students really responded to?
Well, you won't believe this, Alex, Of Mice and Men.
Okay, listeners, just hang on. Scott and I, we knew each other in high school, and we are actors, and we went to state drama contest doing Mice and Men. I was George, he was Lenny. And I mean, we got really close to placing, didn't we?
George? Yes. Yes, we did.
And it's just interesting that where you pulled into acting and in a big way, in so many ways, I mean, you're an award winner, as I mentioned in the intro. You and I always had a great rhythm together. And what I loved about that, many years, 30 plus years later, and I'm writing all this content. God, I'd love for like this guy to read some of this. I've had a great first book, Pilots Cross, read by my buddy John Edmondson, who did a very nice job. John did a nice job, but it's been so many years since we even thought about approaching audiobook level again with the John Pilot mysteries. And Scott was saying, well, you know what I'm thinking about doing? You know, Scott can walk onto the stage at his theater, his community theater, and do whatever, but he's like, you know, I'd like to branch out, get into audiobooks. And I said, oh, well, hey, here's an idea. How about you maybe use some of my stuff just as an audition piece? And then if you like it, and he's like, sure, let's do it. And he did it. And I listened to it. And I said, you know, you don't have to just audition. You can read a whole thing. I was nervous to ask you.
I felt more like you were just giving an old friend some charity. So
stop. I'm cutting that. I am so close to cutting that crap out.
For several years and doing stage work, I've had a lot of vocal training.
Yeah.
And so oddly enough, over the last couple of years, the place where I've most been commented on my voice is church. We go to the local Episcopalian church here in Shawnee. And so every week
Oklahoma, folks.
Sorry. Yeah, Shawnee, Oklahoma. Sorry. And so every week, you know, they have someone come up and read sections from the Old and New Testament. And so when they found out that I was an actor, they asked if I wanted to start reading. And I said, sure, great. You know, I mean, that takes no preparation whatsoever. The only thing is when you have, you know, some of those Old Testament passages with the $10 names and you're like, I don't want to get up and completely embarrass myself. So I would get online and learn how to pronounce those. For, you know, the last 3 years or so, it's funny. To me, it was no big deal, but I would get up and read. And afterwards, almost every Sunday, more than one person would come up to me and say, wow, I really loved your reading today. Right. And except for the one week when one lady said, you read really well, but it was kind of loud.
Were you too close to the mic or whatever?
No, in fact, I pushed the mic away because my voice is that powerful. So, it was actually this year, early this year, I had read in church, and a friend of mine who has done some things with me at the community theater texted me after church, and he said, you know, same thing. Hey, I really loved your reading this morning. I was like, thanks. And he said, have you ever thought about audiobooks, you know, narrating a book?
Oh.
And I said, I've kind of kicked it around before, but I have no idea, you know, how to break into that. And so that just started me thinking, and I went to the one place where everybody goes, and that's the Google. I just put in how do you become an audiobook narrator? And there were multiple sites and multiple blogs of people talking about, it's pretty simple. Here's what you do. You get this, you get this, you get this, and then you go. And so I thought, well, that doesn't sound that bad. I can do that. Yeah. So I bought a decent but fairly inexpensive mic and set up here in my closet and thought, okay, I'm ready to go. And so I set up my profile and that's when I contacted you about using some snippets from your books for samples because I didn't want to get hit with any, copyright laws or anything like that.
Right.
And so then this summer, like you said before, when we were talking and I told you the whole thing, and when you said, hey, you can just do one of mine, I did not feel obligated whatsoever. I was thrilled because I thought, I don't have to go through auditions. I can just do it.
Right. And I've read, and you use the ACX platform, which goes right to Audible/Amazon. And I read one of my books, which is nonfic, which was the podcast option. I did that one myself. And I had another guy read another nonfic I did. And then I had, as I mentioned previously, John Edmondson did the first in the John Pilot series. It's a lot of work. And I'm going to be honest, I probably didn't tell you. Hey, great. By the way, it's a lot of work.
No, you did not. You didn't indicate that whatsoever. And so, once I got into it, I thought, you mean I actually have to do all this myself? I thought maybe an engineer would come to my house and, get all the rough footage and then take it and edit it and make me sound wonderful. It turns out that was me. I was that engineer. And so I spent a lot of time on YouTube looking up how to do things. And once you learn it's not too difficult. Yeah. But, starting from scratch, not ever having done any of it, it took me a while to get going.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and listeners, if you're like, what do you mean? You don't just turn on a recording like on your iPhone and go. There's settings. There's only certain settings Audible will take. I learned that my first one. I didn't record the right bit rate or whatever and all that, but you can get through it. But Scott got through it, and like we got through it on the first run, which was wonderful. It's a 7-hour, 7-minute book. Now, just to be clear, Scott recorded all but the afterword and the acknowledgments. I actually came in and recorded a new afterword and acknowledgement. So if you already have Pilot's Faith, you don't have the full story. So you want to buy it so you can hear the afterword and acknowledgements from David. But Scott, I'm going to tell you, let me just embarrass you a little bit, but I want to tell you that what I was so tickled about listening to your scratch recordings, which a scratch recording basically is his first draft. And I got to tell you, 90% of it was fine. I didn't have to. There was occasionally like I might have heard something he didn't like, a that kind of thing right there where it's not that bad even, but it's a little bit. And I'd be like, hey, buddy, on chapter 7, you got a little bit of, and he'd be like, oh, okay. And he'd go to lift that out or silence that or whatever, which is great on Audacity. You just go in and just generate silence over those things or clip them out if you can. And he did that but I never got on Scott at all as it sounds so pretentious, but the creator of the work and saying, I think you've missed the interpretation. It was never that. It was usually a technical thing or I think that word, whether I did it in the script or you just misread it, it's a different word. And he went and fixed it. And it was that simple, but it's still a lot of work. When you think about that, in 7 hours, 7 seconds is actually pretty short for most books. Scott, are you auditioning currently for other works? And if so, tell us about that experience and how long are they and what's your trepidation about it, or if any?
Well, I am not actively auditioning right now. I'm kind of, once I finish this, I had to kind of take a breath and say, yeah. Okay, because we just found out last week that it had been, approved and out. So we're getting ready to go into Christmas break. And so I hate to make it sound like that I was, ditch digging all day and whatever, but you know,
not easy.
What having a full-time teaching job, and then I would come in and record on the weekends or evenings or whenever I could, it was difficult. And so, yes, I will definitely, I think, in the future, look for new opportunities. I always kind of scan to see if there's any good ones out there to audition for. Rumor has it that the author of the most recent book that I did might be willing to have me back to do another one of his. But, you know, there's no, I can't verify that. But yeah, with ACX, you know, you can go on and authors put their works on there. And so I have kind of scanned through there, but as of this moment, I'm not actively involved in anything. I think I'll get through the Christmas break and after the beginning of the year, start really looking for another one to do. It's really ideal for summer. You know, as everybody knows, you know, teachers only work, you know, a few months out of the year. And so I'll
that's so insulting, but I get your joke. Yeah. Go ahead.
Summer will be great. I mean, I could spend a lot more time getting through things then, but I may go ahead and try to do something else in the spring, possibly.
Now, that was my next question. Thanks for anticipating that. I was going to say, if I were doing these, just like you, I have a day job, you know, everybody who listens knows that, and I don't have to reiterate. I would say doing an audiobook, if like somebody were to hire me, which nobody will except me, is I would say quarterly is the best I could do, one a quarter at most.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I knew going into it that it was going to be time consuming. I don't think I really anticipated just how much. Now, I will say that once I got used to it and right. got into a rhythm and figured out what is the best way to edit and do these things, it did get a little quicker, but it still takes a few minutes.
Would you say that the fact that Pilot's Faith has a pretty large cast of characters, there's a primary cast, secondary cast, and then there's a few stray, you know, ancillary people. Was that part of the problem in the sense, I don't mean a problem, but I mean the challenge in that, you know, because the reader has to be able to differentiate between who you're speaking of. And that's one part of the question. Here's part two. Sorry, hang on to this. Part of my deal when I've read them before and I read short stories and I'm reading some other things is the he said and she said. The author will say he said, right? Like you've read plenty mm-hmm. of he saids from me. You're like, okay, John Pilot, you know, blah, 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 he said. Sheriff Ryder says, blah, 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 he said. There's a temptation to kind of say, well, let me just iterate this character. Let me just make sure this speech pattern is different. And I don't have to say all the he says, but it's still part of the text. How do you approach that? If that doesn't make sense, let me know. But how do you approach in general iterating between, especially males, like three males in a room? I know, for example, excuse me, and I'm sorry, I'm taking forever to ask this question. There's three males in the room on this sample 5 minutes of this book on Audible. How do you do that?
Okay, so I think there were about 10 parts to that question. So I'll go back and
he said.
So yes, there was a large cast of characters, and before I even started, you know, I talked to you and kind of wanted to get some ideas because, of course, you as the creator hear these characters in your head. Right. So I wanted to make sure that I did them right, that I did them right. justice, and you gave me some really good notes on several of them. You know, I think this person sounds like this, this person sounds like this, and I tried to emulate that as much as possible. I do think the he saids and the she saids and all those, I look at a text as an English teacher, as an actor, the word on the page is sacred. If it's written that way, that's how I want to present it. You know, as an actor on the stage, you want to stick to it as closely as possible. And of course, when you get into a live situation and you may drop a line here or there or whatever, but as a director, I really get on my actors about, you know, the author is a pretty acclaimed playwright and wrote it that way for a reason. And so you need to say it the way it's written. Because, you know, you think back to when we were younger actors, you know, 70 years ago when we were in high school, and you'd say, oh, well, I don't really like this line this way. I'm just going to say it this way. And and you'd get away with that. But as I get older, I'm like, no, that's how it's written. And so when I look at a book, a novel, a short story, I think of it in the same way. The author had a very specific reason for using the words that he or she does. I talk about this when I teach, you know, interpretation of literature and poetry, that they don't just slap words down. It's a deliberate process. And so I didn't ever want to think, oh, well, I can just take this out or whatever. And I think maybe you even gave me free rein at some point to remove some of those, but it does help differentiate somewhat between the characters as well. I tried to do that vocally as much as possible and make them sound distinct, but it doesn't hurt to have that extra little "he said," or, you know, "that's what she said," you know, something like that. If that answers any of your questions.
I think so. I remember when I was in college, you know, and I didn't accept the theater ride, but I did do the theater, and we had a playwright come in, and he wrote when I say award-winning, I mean top award-winning. I'm not going to say much more. He came in, and I remember watching, I wasn't in the show, but I was watching rehearsals and was privileged to have dinner with him a couple of times. And I saw what happened when the actresses, because it was mostly actresses in the lead, were trying to freelance a little bit. And it just, he wasn't mean about it, but he was just like, no, that's not why I wrote it that way. So I respect the fact that you respect the material that way. That taught me that lesson. Because, you know, it's funny when you're in high school, like you and me, it's like, oh, it's just John Steinbeck. Come on, man, let's make it work.
Yeah.
you know, it's just Greater Tunic. Come on. Although Greater Tunic and John Steinbeck, I'm not making equivocation. But anyway, but yeah, I totally get that. But I, as a former performer, wanted to make sure you felt that you could at least tell an entertaining story. And I still feel that way to this day. If you were ever to work with me again, and I said with, not for, I would want you to amp it up as far as making entertaining. I listened to a lot of audiobooks the past few years because I'm trying to get into that mindset. And the best shows for me, you know, I listened to a lot of David Sedaris. But David does a lot of his audiobooks are recorded live, and he acts them out very well. But it's a different thing than a fiction. His are basically, as far as we can tell, nonfiction. But I listen to the fiction stuff, and the fiction stuff that really lifts off the page and entertains me and keeps me from falling asleep when I'm listening is what you do and what you have done with Pilot's Faith, which is you're acting it out. The reason why I suggested that we use the scene at the hospital bed between Bob Hayes, Sheriff Ryder, and John Pilot is because there's such a distinction between all three characters and the way you added energy to the scene, which is the way I, as an author, meant it to be. When I write these things as a former actor, I act them out. My grandpa taught me that, the author, and he would act out all his scenes. And I learned that from him. And I'm not putting you on the spot and asking you to say, but I hope I didn't put you on the spot too often where you as an actor had to be like, this is excruciating. How do I lift this off the page, make this scene interesting? If there were no scenes like that, I did not know that because you did it so well. So thank you for that. And I mean that. And I don't have to say this because, dude, I figure if we're ever going to get mad at each other, it's already happened. So we probably have, but it's at this point, we're good. But you did such a wonderful job. Let me ask you, though, prior to working in audiobooks, did you listen to audiobooks as a regular listener at all?
No, I did not regularly. And here's why. And I know this is going to be horribly ironic or hypocritical. I'm not sure which. It's hard for me to listen to other people.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know if I have some kind of undiagnosed ADD or if not that many people really capture my attention. But to sit and listen for someone for more than about 10 minutes is a struggle for me.
10 minutes even?
You know, maybe 15. So as the, and I know you don't want to hear this as a, you know, professional speaker, but especially as this audiobook thing has really taken off, and I have so many friends who are very literate and avid readers, and they haven't abandoned the page altogether, but they talk about how much they enjoy the audiobooks, like if they're driving or if they're working and they have to, you know, be using their hands doing something else. And I've tried it, and I just, it's difficult for me to keep focus. It's not difficult when I'm reading, and it's not because I think that I'm doing it better than they would. It's just, it's a matter of focus. And so, maybe I just haven't heard the right one yet. I don't know. But it is, I think I am much more of a visual person. And so I can sit and focus watching a TV show or a film for several hours, or sit and read, you know, the written page for hours and hours, you know, when you get lost in a good book. But to have nothing to focus on visually and just listen, it's kind of difficult for me. But I don't want you all out there to be that way. You should listen to the book.
Well, but that's my next question. Do you think that we are so conditioned nowadays, our society, screen time, et cetera, where, you know, theater of the mind, which is radio and audiobooks, is radio of the mind, is that something that's going, is it on its way out? Are you latching on to the last days of this? Or do you think that actually there's going to be rising up a swell of people who would prefer the theater, not radio of the mind, sorry, theater of the mind, which is what I think audiobooks are. What, if you get my meaning?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going out at all. I think we're seeing a swell in the popularity, and I think it's almost a return, just like we are seeing now a return, younger people buying vinyl.
That's a great
point. We thought that vinyl was dead, and it had gone away, and everything was digital, and now they're going back to vinyl. I think in some ways, you know, people are reverting back to the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, where, you know, they gathered around the radio and listened to these radio plays. And I think there is still a very big appeal for that. I see it also with my kids at school. They are somewhat of the opposite of me. It's difficult for them to sit and read a book, but they are very auditory people. Teenagers, you know, you don't see them without their earbuds in, because they're constantly listening to something. And so when we're reading something for class, if I'm trying to teach a novel in class and I'm not reading it aloud to them, I always give them an audio version alternative, and a lot of them take advantage of it because it's simpler for them and more enjoyable for them to listen to it than to read it. So I don't know if it will ever, it's not going to obviously overtake, you know, the visual, the television binging and films and things like that. But I definitely don't think it's on its way out. Now I have no data obviously to support that, but just my observations, I think it's still a very much strong and possibly growing industry.
You know what I think we need is some growing and possibly strong audio. So let's hear a little snippet of Scott Bartley reading.
Well, it's dark on the field. I turned off the main strip landing lights and heading over to my trailer. Going to tune up my bike for next week's ride. Damn thing's wobbling after I hit a rock over on the state highway.
Bob, Ryder said, gentle but firm.
Yeah?
Get on with it, he said.
Gotcha. Anyway, I noticed that the lights on the outbuildings were off.
I thought that you turned them off, Pilot inquired.
The landing lights, not the lights around my office and trailer, Hayes said. They're on a timer. Well, not a timer, a motion sensor. My motion should have made them fire up. They didn't. Stayed dark.
Unusual, I take it? Pilot asked.
Yeah, Hayes sighed, grimacing. I need a little more of that painkiller juice. I think it's close to my next dose, because it's starting to hurt like fire.
Sorry, Ryder said, hitching a thumb over his shoulder. I can get the nurse.
No use, he said. She'll just tut-tut and say, not until time.
Oh, Ryder said. Well, let's keep talking. Maybe it'll take your mind off it. Hayes opened his eyes and looked at Ryder quizzically.
Yeah, right, sure.
He closed his eyes again.
Okay, so the lights aren't working, and Jet wasn't around either.
Jet? Pilot asked.
Yeah, he's my dog. Sweet chocolate lab. Boon companion. Had him a couple of years. Had the run of the place, but when he'd hear my keys jingling, he usually came running, because he knew dinner isn't far off. But he didn't come.
The dog that did not bark in the night, Pilot said, low and under his breath.
Huh?
Hayes grunted. Nothing. So the lights are off, the dog's not around, and you're doing what?
Well, I called for Jet a couple of times. Nothing.
Hayes grimaced.
Bastards.
He breathed in through pursed lips, exhaling as though silently whistling. Pilot shot Ryder a look. Ryder stared at Hayes, folding his arms across his chest wordlessly.
So I headed towards the office to see if he was up to something in there. Also wanted to see if there was a problem with the lights. It's only about 20 feet from the tower door. So, Hayes continued, I whistled for Jet as I walked over. I got to the office door and opened it.
Locked? Pilot asked. Hayes made a face.
Folks don't lock the doors much round here, John. Figure you'd know that by now.
Well, you locked the tower door.
That's FAA regs, man, he said. Tower is critical infrastructure on a Muni airport. After 9/11, everybody got worried about terrorism, even in this little burg.
He guffawed, coughed, and cleared his throat.
Come to think of it, maybe they were right.
The door was unlocked, and you stepped inside, Ryder stated. Hayes nodded.
What happened next? Pilot said.
I flicked the light switch. Nothing happened. Dark as pitch. I got a little spooked and was reaching for my phone to use the flashlight when I heard the shot. Next thing I know, I'm on the floor, my side wet, hard to breathe. I'm gasping and trying to comprehend what happened. That's when I saw him.
You saw his face?
Not exactly, Hayes said. I'm feeling warm on my side like I just pissed my pants. Didn't hurt yet. Guess I was in shock. But I see a shape move in the darkness. Comes right at me in a couple of silent steps and stands over me.
What did he look like? Pilot said, leaning closer to Hayes's bed.
All I could conjure at first was he had longish hair to his shoulders, tall and thin. Face was in shadow. Stood over me a second or two, didn't say anything.
Too dark to see his face? Pilot said.
Yeah. Then without saying a word, he lit a match, and I could see it.
He shuddered.
They say there's no devil, John, but I've seen him. Just as sure as I see you standing there.
Devil? Pilot said.
He looked demonic. Maybe some kind of high-priced mask. Looked like old Scratch himself, you know? Or maybe the Underwood deviled ham guy. Arched eyebrows, slitted eyes, maybe a thin mustache and beard. It happened so fast.
Okay, what happened then?
He said that the bullet is a present. A nice present from Jack Lindstrom. Dead Jack. And he put out the match and stepped over me and disappeared.
And that was Scott Bartley reading from Pilot's Faith by, again, yours truly. Scott, you know, that scene, what I love about it is how you have Sheriff Ryder, Bob Hayes, who's kind of an ancillary character, Ryder being a strong character, basically, a main character. And then, of course, John Pilot, who is the hero protagonist, whatever word you want to use, hapless victim of the John Pilot mystery. You had read the series prior. I know this for a fact. You'd read all 8 books. There's a novella in there, but it's basically 8 books. Was there any trepidation about being coming? And again, there was another author, or excuse me, a reader ahead of you who had done this 8 or 9 years ago with the first book. Was there any trepidation about becoming the voice of John Pilot, who maybe not is a huge bestseller, but definitely is somebody that is read by maybe a couple of thousand people? What do you think about that?
I don't think so. I mean, logically, I probably, when you gave me the option, you said you could pick whichever book you want. Mm-hmm. And you said the first one had already been done. And I thought to myself at the time, well, the most recent one was Faith, which had just come out, a couple of years previously.
2021.
Yeah. And so it was the freshest on my mind. I mean, I guess logically I should have gone back and said, I'll do book 2. And then we could have, you know, progressed on from there. And that may still happen. I don't know. But, you know, I thought, no, I think I just want to go with this one because it was the one that I remembered the most at the time. And, you know, frankly, I thought that you really grew as a writer throughout the series. And not to say that the earlier ones were not as good, but there was definitely.
Hey, listen, but, Faith is, listen, I'm proud of Cross from the beginning, but to me, it's, you know, there's like 3 of them that are really, I think, are really good. And then there's the others that are decent, you know, so I'm totally with you. It's okay. You don't have to be embarrassed. It's fine. I appreciate what you said.
But also I the thing that appealed to me about it, and they all have a pretty good cast of characters, but, you know, Faith, you kind of bring back, you know, so many of the ones that appeared previously, it was a little exciting and a little daunting at the same time to think, oh, okay, I've got, when I started reading through it again and writing down all of the characters, and mm-hmm. I think at one point I had like a list of maybe 30 or so. Yeah. And some of them were pretty minor, but I thought, in my mind, I thought, there's no way these are all going to sound different. So
there is no way.
Because, you know, when Joe, who is clearing off the table at the restaurant in chapter 10, sounds exactly like the busboy in chapter 2, you know, I'm just thinking in my mind, okay, hopefully they won't remember that this is the exact same voice. And I think that one thing I did learn from this experience is I need to, and I'm sure experienced people do this, when I am creating these characters, have a recording of all of them. Right. Because there was a time, you know, where a character would appear early and then wouldn't come back until later on. And so that could have been a month later for me. And then I'm thinking, oh my God, how did this character sound? So I would go back and listen to it. And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. But I think if I would have had a bank of all of the characters recorded, it would have been much simpler for me to, to jump in there. But, no, I remember with John Pilot, and you gave me this note fairly early on. You mentioned that, Pilot sounded very much like just the narrator of the story. Yeah. And that was kind of intentional because in my mind, when I am reading a book or a story or watching a show or a play or whatever, I always have to identify with at least one character. And to me, John Pilot is kind of the everyman, albeit, you know, he's very flawed. I think because of those flaws, people really identify with them. And so for me, that's why I just kind of made Pilot basically my voice, because I didn't want to do anything really weird or crazy with it, because I wanted him to be the one that was the most identifiable, I guess.
I was like, gosh, Scott gets him though, because I think you made the right choice. It's like, no, let's make Pilot the tabula rasa. Let's make Pilot the guy that everybody can latch onto. and let's build all these other characters around him that are very differentiated. And because as you said, and I 100% agree, Scott, most people when you're reading, the voice of the main voice you hear is your own interpreting the lead character. And I think you did that so brilliantly. Listeners, he mentioned I gave him some notes, but they're pretty sparse notes. As a former director and actor, I know for a fact you can over-direct and give way too many notes to an actor, and that is not the path to glory. I just spoke today to Carla in Canada, who is getting ready to put her book out on ACX for a new novella and looking for it. And I said, you need to make sure you get somebody who cannot just read well. I read well in church, although Scott reads well in church, who can interpret, though. And it doesn't even have to be an actor, but it has to be someone who can read and interpret properly. And that's what Scott does. You've kind of hinted you'd do it again.
First of all, yes, it would interest me. I don't know if there's really a particular genre, fiction, nonfiction, or, you know, as we've talked about, this is my, you know, breaking into this business. And so I don't have much to draw upon. I enjoyed the fiction, the multiple characters, the multiple scenes, the plot twists, things like that. It makes it fun. But that's not to say I wouldn't enjoy doing, you know, some nonfiction as well.
Right.
You know, I don't at this point feel like I'm locked into any specific genre or type or anything like that. I think to me, it's something that interests me, regardless of the type.
Is there, if you could tell other authors listening out there who may get on the ACX platform where they can find you. And by the way, there'll be a link in the show notes, folks, so you can hunt this guy down and you need to hire him. But by the way, just understand that you're not getting ahead of me. All right. But anyway, if you,
unless they pay more,
which by the way, yeah, there's that. And that's very evidently could happen. But if, Scott, what do authors need to know when they put a book out on ACX? Again, I know you have not auditioned for a million things yet. Looking around the platform, and as an, can I call you a performer if that's okay?
Sure, you can.
As a performer, what are you looking for in a script, whether it be fic or non-fic? What are you looking for? I just want to give the listeners who are writers a tip or two on what a good reader and performer.
The thing that always draws me to any story, more than plot, are characters. I want to see well-drawn characters that have a lot of depth, that stay true to their character. You've seen and read so many times where you're reading and you think, no, this character would not do or say that. And it completely pulls me out of the story. So I am drawn to things that have strong characters. And this is going to sound really not cliche or shallow. I don't know of a better way to say this, but it's got to be well written.
There's writing and then there's typing, right?
Yes,
and by the way,
yes.
You've read some shit, excuse my language of mine, that has been typing, but you've read some of my stuff that's right.
Yes.
And so and let's be honest. Yeah.
And in this date, this time of self-publication, most people, if they really put the effort forth, can publish a book. It doesn't mean that they should.
You sound like me. I think I've said that once or twice. I have, yeah.
I mean, because they're, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but no. There are people that I know that have written things and they say, oh, I've written these books. And I'm like, oh, great. And I'll start. Some of them I just can't finish because the characters are poorly drawn or the plot makes no sense or the prose is just too
purple,
dense and ridiculous. And, you know, I'm looking for things that I like the characters. I want to make sure that they stay true to themselves. I want a good plot, obviously. The one thing I do like about your books is that it's for the masses, but at the same time doesn't insult your intelligence because I'll be reading along And there are the occasional, and I'm a literate person and I teach literature, but occasionally there's a word and I'm like, I don't know what that is. And so, you know, I get out the Googler and look it up and I'm like, oh yeah. Okay.
But it's not like, hopefully it's not like
I'm trying to sound smart. Here's my word.
That's exactly it. And I talk to my students about that in writing essays. You know, we talk about sophisticated writing and diction. I say, you know, the thing that differentiates the great writers from the good ones is just that, the sophisticated level of diction. And I said, that doesn't mean go in and just start throwing in them big words when they really don't fit or seem out of place. And yours don't. They don't seem out of place. They fit, but it lets me know that you are an intelligent person and understand things like plot and character, but it's not just dumb, if that makes any sense at all.
No, of course, because I feel like I'm trying to advance the story and the language a little bit. Can I give you an example? And I'm going to talk about somebody we both knew. Okay. Robert, my editor. You knew Robert as long as I did. And I know you weren't as close to him, but you knew him. Folks, if you're not, know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Robert Hayes, my editor. We lost him in October 2023, whenever you're listening to this. And it's still an open wound for me. And I know Scott knew him. And I remember I had not an argument, but he's my editor. And do you remember? Okay, you know the whole he... to John Pilate is a duality between him and Simon. It's a duality. It's a Gemini thing. Well, there's a word that I found that I just, it's an ancient Roman word based on the there's a God who had two faces. And it's a janiform existence, which is Janus. It's a janiform existence. A Gemini is somebody who has two faces. And Pilate is a two-faced guy. Scott, am I right? He's yes. Two-faced. And I don't just mean Pilate. I mean, I don't mean just being with Simon as his alter ego. He's two-faced because he lies. He lies to people he loves. He has fairly noble reasons to lie, if there are any, but he's still a liar to a degree. But there's this whole thing about a janiform existence. And I remember Robert read that and he goes, you know, that's not going to cut it with people who only understand fourth grade English. But then, I mean, he literally in the same note read, oh, fuck it. It's poetic. I like it. Leave it in. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yes. I do like to be challenged somewhat when I read. I don't want to have to, you know, keep a dictionary by my bedside.
Yeah, that's no fun.
But no. But yes, I think that's a perfect example because when I saw that I had to look it up myself. And
really?
And when you explain it. Oh yeah.
Oh.
And but when I looked it up, and when you explain it that way, it makes absolute perfect sense for the character. Yeah, there are instances like that, and I'll do that, you know, in basically any good novel that I read. You know, I don't pretend to have an all-knowing vocabulary. I pretend sometimes when my wife is reading and she'll say, what does this mean? And even if I don't know, I'm like, well, clearly that is referring to the, you know, whatever. Because if I don't know, then she'll just sneer at me and say, aren't you an English teacher? You know, whatever.
Aren't you? I could just hear her saying that. Aren't you an English teacher? I love Cindy. I adore her. Anyway, go ahead.
So yes, that's a perfect example. The fact that it's you know, kind of on one hand this fun basic pulp fiction that anybody can identify with, but at the same time there's still those little bits in there that challenge me as a reader. I really enjoy that, and it keeps me interested.
Well, and it shows in your performance, Scott, and I'm sincere about that, in that you. Okay, and I don't want to like be too florid here. We're almost done here, folks. But my point being is that if it's painterly in the sense of verbally painterly, in the sense that he's delivering the text, but he's he's painting and coloring a little bit of the intelligence. Okay, he said it, I didn't, but I'll just say it. He said it. The intelligence I put into this and some of the thoughts, it makes me so happy. And that's why when I heard what he did, and that's, Scott, that's why I have very few, any corrections I had whatsoever were very minor stuff. Did I even once come at you about interpretation? I don't think I did. I was like,
I don't think so. It was mostly technical.
And I've directed you in plays, and you've directed me. And I was like, you know, I don't, that's the wonderful thing about hiring an actor to do audiobooks is actors know how to receive direction without their ego getting in the way. As long as you're not being an a-hole, and you know, I've stopped being an a-hole, I don't know, at least 2-3 minutes ago. So my point is, I think this went very well. Hey, look, Scott, I have taken, gosh, way too much of your time, and I could go on, and I just wanted to say, Pilot's Faith, it's a 7-hour, 7-minute book, including my own afterword and acknowledgments, but it's all 99% you.
Well, I think I've already touched on some of those things. There are multiple, I think, really rich and layered characters.
Right.
Some of them, you know, that have appeared in all, many or all of the novels, some of them new. It's a wide variety of characters, which were really fun to play because of that. But like I said, that's one of the things that really appeals to me about a story. I think the plot moves along nicely, briskly. I think there are some nice twists and turns. It's frustrating for me when I'm watching something or reading something and you could see something, some plot twist or turn coming from a mile away. And you know, it's like, oh yeah, this is going to happen and this is going to happen. And then it does. And you're like, oh, okay. And I didn't get that sense with this book. There were, you know, it's not like a, you know, M. Night Shyamalan film, you know, with, you know, they were dead the whole time or something like that.
No, it's not good.
But there are some nice little twists that keep you guessing right up until the very end, and so I really, really like that. And like I said, the prose, it's simple. This is an oxymoron. It's simple yet challenging at the same time. It is a little poetic at times, and I really, really appreciated that. So I think there's a lot of great reasons to read this this work by J. Alexander Greenwood.
Oh my goodness! Well, thank you. Again, I will send you an extra, you know, royalty on top of this. But you know, you said you're open to doing it. I'm going to be indulgent because it's my show, it's my series. But so the books that are left are the second book, Pilot's Key, third book, Pilot's Ghost, fourth book, Pilot's. Was it Blood or it's Blood, and then Seven, then Rose, my gosh, and then it was Shadow, which is a novella that was rolled into Faith. Is there any one of those that if you have the time and you weren't too caught up with other things that you might be interested in reading? And if you haven't thought about it, it's cool. I just curious.
I haven't you know, like stayed awake in the night and wondering about which one. But I have considered it, and I do think that if I did, I'd want to just go back and pick up with number two. That way, if it were to continue,
right,
you know, to do it in order, I don't want to do it like a, you know, when you watch Jeopardy and someone picks a money amount like right in the middle.
Right.
And you're like, why are you doing that? That right. I don't know why that bothers me. It's my OCD, I don't know. And so I think I would want to go back to two since one has already been done, and then just work my way. You know, I wouldn't want to skip around, if that makes sense.
It makes plenty of sense. And you know what? I'm not holding you to it. You're not under any contract here, but I will tell you this. If you wanted to do that, I'd be thrilled. Although I would then be like, wait a minute, you got to do more than ever. But I will tell you this. If we ever record Pilot 7, which is the book of 7 short stories with the secondary characters, maybe you and I could work together on them. That might be fun to act with you again. Just a thought. You don't have to say yes. Just think it over. It's short stories. It's a short book. It might be something we could do together. I don't know. I will say this. I'm going to break some news right here on the show. Can I break some news?
It's better than breaking wind.
I knew you would say that. God, you go to high school with a guy. You know a guy. share a dressing room with a guy and you know about breaking wind. All right, listeners, if you have stuck with us through this whole show, I'm going to tell you something right now. I have done a little voice acting here, and it's not anything Scott will be mad about, because it's canon, but it's not, you know, 100% published. It's a Kindle Vella series. I did it last Christmas. It's called Pilot's Carol, and it is basically the John Pilot mystery series take on A Christmas Carol, and you'll start finding out the last week of the year, or the 5 days before Christmas. Every day that week, there'll be a new episode. I've acted out all the parts. I'm nowhere near as good as Scott, but I do my level best. But that is the only time I ever want to step on his toes. If he's free and interested, I'd love it if he could finish out the series. Scott, there'll be a link in the show notes by the time this comes out. At the very least, if there's not a link to, well, you know what? Wait, what is today, Scott? It's the day it lived in infamy. It's December 7th as we record this. It'll come out in a couple of days. So actually, it'll be around, I guess, the 5th, and there'll be 5 episodes of that. But listen, don't wait around for my nonsense. Go get Pilot's Faith, the final book in the series, as far as I know. Scott does a wonderful job of not just telling the story, but bringing the characters to life. And, you know, I didn't even ask him about this, and I'm probably going to squeeze one more question in before we go. Scott, I got to ask, though, we didn't even get into this. Doing the female characters, is that hard for you to do?
Well, I think the short answer is yes, it is. Because you don't want it to sound ridiculous.
Right.
You know, being obviously male, I thought, how can I really differentiate? And there were two main female characters. There's some side ones, and they had some more character traits that were kind of easier to latch onto. But the two main ones, it was a little tricky. I wanted to make sure they Val.
Val, you're not talking about though Nelda though. She's easy in more ways than one, right?
Yes,
but Kate and Val are different because they're two sides of the coin. They're two strong women, right?
Yes, and so I was like, okay, so not only do I have to present them as female, but even differentiate between those two. And so that was a little tricky. And there would be times that I would read something and I would think, I think that sounds exactly like the other one. And, you know, I might re-record it or whatever. But, I think I did okay with it. It's kind of tricky. I'm not going to lie.
Last couple of questions here real quick. What are you doing on the stage next? Anything now or soon?
Well, it's funny that you ask, Alex. In February, here in Shawnee, yes, at the Shawnee Little Theater, which is our local community theater, I'm going to be acting. I just found out today that I will be appearing in that show, the play that goes wrong. I don't know if you're familiar with that show.
No.
It ran on Broadway for several years. I'll send it to you. There's a little clip on YouTube that they did. It's a British troupe. And so we saw it in New York about 6 years ago. And as you know, my wife, who seldom laughs at anything, the four of us sat there in this show and we all were crying laughing.
Really?
One of the funniest shows I have ever seen. It's exactly what the title says, the play that goes wrong. So the concept is it's a theater troupe that's presenting a murder mystery, and they're not the best actors in the world. And literally, you know this from your years on the stage and anybody who has ever acted, literally anything that can possibly go wrong on stage goes wrong in this play.
Oh my God. Did they have an a-hole friend of yours who was like playing jokes on you and the like I used to? Because that's part of it right there.
I don't think there was anybody that was that big of a jerk in this play, but
it's so true. I was an asshole.
But you know, like set pieces falling apart, lines being said wrong, characters coming in at the wrong time. It is truly hysterical. And so we're doing that in February, and I am going to be acting in it. I'm just acting. I'm playing the director of the play.
Okay, there.
And then in the play within a play, I play the inspector who is investigating the murder at Haversham Manor.
Really well, by the way. You do officious inspector types very well.
Yes, and it's all British, so I'll get to really, you know, hone that British accent. And then after that, I very rarely do I do anything back to back because I'm really old and tired now. But
yeah.
In April, I am directing, same place, Shawnee Little Theater. I'm directing a production of Addams Family, the musical. It's a musical. And it has all your favorites from the show. The whole Addams Family. And you're not in it.
You gotta be Herman.
I'm not gonna do it. It's too hard, Alex. And I'm too old. And I'm too tired. And there will be a Bartley in the show. My daughter Marilyn is going to be playing Wednesday. So,
oh my gosh, she'll be great.
Yes, she will. I have no doubt.
Both
so,
your children are great little actresses. And I say little, that diminishes them. I don't mean to, but they're great. They're great.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I totally agree. So, yeah, I do have a couple of things coming up.
When did you get to where it was like, because you know what? The last time we did show together was 20 years ago, and I was having a hard time with lines and stuff. Do you get to where you were just like, oh my God, the lines? Because it's not, folks, it's not just because, oh, I can't remember when you're in high school or college, and basically all you have to do is memorize lines, and then early in your community, college career, or whatever. But you get older and you have a day job, you have a mortgage, you have all these things, it gets tougher and tougher. I found it very difficult very quickly. I can't remember what happened, you know, day to day in the first couple or three books I wrote in my series, folks. So, Scott, are you running into that at all? Is that part of your thing with this?
Let me tell you two quick stories. So, first of all, to answer, absolutely. It is harder and harder. I'm about to turn 56, which isn't that old, but, you know, in my mind, it's elderly. And so when I was 50, we did a production of The Lion in Winter. And
which I envy you that you got that role, by the way.
Yes, that's okay. Yeah, because literally he has the line that I'm a 50-year-old king. And so I played it when I was 50. He has a lot of lines. It wasn't until maybe about a week before we opened that I really felt comfortable and had the line solidified. Now, I will say I pulled it off and was quite good, I'll say. But at the cast party afterwards, the director, we were all hanging out and we were kind of laughing about the fact that it took me so long. And I looked at him and we'd been drinking some. And I said, so was there, you know, ever a point where you were worried that I may not actually get them? And he goes, yeah.
Oh, shit.
And I was oh, sorry to... sorry to scare you. And then about a year or two later, we did another show and it was a two-person show. And this is the one we actually took to state and regional competition. Right. It's a play called Annapurna and it was a two-person show. And so obviously with a two-person show, you're going to have a lot of lines.
Well, we did basically a couple of two-person shows together and I know that.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
You were always, by the way, sorry to interrupt, you were always sharper than me on the lines. I mean, you always were. So it's weird when I hear you're like going, I'm struggling at this point. It's weird.
I no longer have that reputation of being sharper on the line. So so we did this show. And as we were starting it, there was some friends of ours, a couple that he directed it and she stage managed. And they knew of my struggles. And so they came in and they said, okay, we're going to have a contest. Whichever one of you gets off book first will get this prize basket. And they had like all this stuff in this basket that they had put together. And it was like a pretty impressive prize basket. And, you know, I thought, I want that basket. And so
I know you.
I did. I got off book before my partner did.
If you had offered me a damn prize basket, I would have beat your ass because I'm so competitive. But by the way, that's the listeners. That's the thing. Even when we were partners and going to state together and acting, we were competitive as F. But, it worked. And then here you go. It's different now because you're interpreting my words. But I feel like somehow still we're acting together. And I am so blessed to have you on board for the John Pilot universe. And yeah, you're damn right. You just pick the next one you want to do, and it's yours, my brother.
I've always treasured our friendship and our relationship. I mean, we're going on about 40 years. So that's a long time. So
Scott Bartley is the interpreter, reader, performer of Pilot's Faith. There's a link on the show notes. If you are a writer, if you have a book that you want him to read, you'll be damn lucky to have him. And I invite you to click on it. It's at ACX. And if you don't have an ACX account, it's easy to set up. Follow it there. Sign up. Scott can audition, or you can reach out directly and say, this is what I'm doing. He can look at your material. You can work it out through ACX. Go there. And again, Scott Bartley, thanks for joining us here. Mysterious goings on, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Aboard the 1040 EZ, on the eve of Christmas Eve, John Pilot's mood is as tumultuous as the waves. Embracing his inner Scrooge, he shuns even his closest friend, Taters Malley. Yet the sea holds magic on this night. Visited by ghosts of his past, present, and future, Pilot embarks on a revelatory journey. Can these apparitions soften his heart, or will fate cast him overboard? Discover a maritime spin on the Dickens classic where redemption may lie beneath the moonlit waters in Pilot's Carol, a five-part series, written and read by the author J. Alexander Greenwood. Pilot's Carol. Does Pilot have a ghost of a chance? Available exclusively on Mysterious Goings On, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on Mysterious Goings On. Be sure to follow Mysterious Goings On wherever you get your podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget, you can get the links to books and other things mentioned on the show at mgopod.com. Until next time, keep reading.